This is episode 4 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
Away from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you. So let's talk about two boats and one helicopter. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. I'm Mary.
My name is Blake, and I would never have the balls put it all on red, especially 80 grand. Wouldn't happen. No way. Not a chance.
I was biting my nails. You and I were saying, like, he doesn't need to put all of that. He should pocket 20,000. He would still have enough.
I know. Well, I ended up thinking about this later on. The reason why I think he put the full thing on was because he knew he wanted to put the money back into the little container that Kevin Sr. left him. For whatever reason, he felt like I had to pay that back. So I think that's why he put it all down there like that.
Well, the note said, Dear Rev, you know, he knew that the Reverend was going to take that money. Mm-hmm. Before we even jump into this episode, I didn't know necessarily this title, Two Boats and One Helicopter.
Yeah.
There are no boats in this episode. There is no helicopter in this episode. There's not even a penguin like there was last time. So I'm like watching this episode, waiting for something. And then I'm thinking like, oh, maybe it's going to be a boat like Noah's Ark. And no, it wasn't. So do you know the story about this title?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, Lindelof, in an interview that he gave, I don't know, about a week or two ago, said that he and Tom Perrotta got pretty pretentious about the episode titles. And I think yesterday's episode, last week's episode title, the Penguin 1, Us 0, that's pretty indicative of that. But this one is a reference to one of those religious parables where the guy is saying to whoever that I was on a house that was being flooded, and everybody was walking by saying, hey, you better like get on this boat, you know, we're taking off, we're heading out. And the guy says, no, God will provide, God will take care of me. Well, of course the guy croaks because God never showed up, right? So he goes to God at the pearly gates and says,
wait, what does this have to do with two boats and one helicopter?
I'm about to tell you. So the guy goes to the pearly gates and says, hey God, where were you? I was asking for you, I thought you'd provide. And God says, well, I sent two boats and one helicopter for you. What more do you want?
Who is this guy? Who said this?
I don't know. It's like a religious parable. It's like a joke. I don't know what it is. But
a religious parable. I feel like all parables, when you call it a parable, that means it's from the olden times where everyone wore sandals.
No, those are fables.
No, fables are totally different. Fables are like when animals talk, like the lion and the lamb.
No, well, yeah, maybe you're right. Like Aesop's fables.
Yeah, you obviously stopped going to church school a lot sooner than I did.
I don't even think I ever went to church school at all.
Anyway, so you're saying that Damon and Tom came up with this episode title, even though it had nothing to do with what was actually inside of the episode. They're expecting people to listen to his interview or Google this on their own.
No, I don't think they're expecting us to listen to that at all, except for like freaks like me who do that. No. Again, that's why I said he says that he gets pretentious about the titles. You know, I think he has a meaning for each title. I also think that the story is indicative of the title, with Matt Jameson, the Reverend, just asking God for help and thinking that he's not getting anything, thinking that God's going to come help him. And ultimately, he fails on his own because he's not paying attention, or he's paying attention to the wrong things.
Well, I just wish that, you know, Damon Lindelof would just send out a tweet and say, just so you guys know, here's the answer to why I named it this way.
Well, he's not going to send out any more tweets because all the people that hated on Lost drove him out of Twitter, literally.
But now he names things two boats, one helicopter, and people like me don't have time to go Google and figure out what that means. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you were able to make sense of it. And now we can move on and get into what was going on in this episode.
Well, but actually, this is usually the time that we reserve for what we missed last episode. But I'm going to forego that because I got a bone to pick.
Okay.
I got a bone to pick with Sean T. Collins from Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, Sean T. I thought you were going to be Sean T. from T25. Like
Insanity?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. He'd kick my ass.
He would.
No. Sean T. Collins, I hope you're listening because you are a total a-hole.
Blake, that's really not nice.
I don't care. I'm not here to be nice. I'm here to talk about my opinion.
Okay.
Bro, you got to calm down. He wrote a scathing review of this particular episode, and it really bothered me because he's such an elitist. Now, bear with me as I read some of this review. He says he didn't like the episode because it was the worst of what Damon Lindelof has to offer. And he says, in the end, he concludes it by saying, "Of course the church where Matt gave his impassioned sermon about his cancer-stricken youth and the comatose little girl that reminded him of it was going to be near empty. Of course the church's mystery buyers, the show that made a big point of the banker not knowing exactly who they were going to turn out to be the guilty remnant. Of course Matt's wife's coma was going to be caused by a departure-related accident, launching his vendetta against the sanctification of the departed. And of course the drunken dirtbags who shouldered into Matt's roulette hot streak were going to jack him for the cash in the parking lot, just in case you couldn't see it coming, which anyone, especially the casino's abysmally lax security team, should have been able to do. The camera spent a pointlessly long time just staring at Matt in his car, building up a pointless calm before the predictable storm. Like the rest of it, it's a failed attempt to wring shock and suspense out of a foregone conclusion." Sean T. Collins, you are a moron. I'm sorry. That wasn't a beautiful episode. And you are just hating on The Leftovers because it's the cool thing to do. Because everybody else liked this episode. You just hated on it. And we're going to give you a serious boo. Like, crazy boo here.
Well, now that you were able to reprimand poor Sean, I'm not going to say anything bad about Sean. I will echo that I completely saw that jerk drunk guy breaking into his car. Blake can second this. I was sitting on the couch saying, drive, stop looking at your money. Stop sitting there, drive. Someone's going to rob you. They should not have just given him an envelope of that. I would have asked for it in a check.
A check?
I would have said, excuse me, casino people, I do not feel comfortable leaving with this much cash. Could you please just write me a check?
Or at least have a security guard come with me to my car.
Seriously?
In the middle of the night.
So I understand that part of Sean T. Collins. I mean, he's a little upset about that. And I was very upset with that, too, because I sure as heck knew the drunk guy was going to come and try to get his money.
I don't know. I just think that it was needlessly. It was like one of those guys that are trying to be ironic for ironic sake. Like the guy that wears like a tied T-shirt. Like, I hate that. Like, don't just say something to just say it to incite idiots like me from putting it on their podcast about how you're an a-hole. Oh. You know, I'm going to give you a giant F you, and you deserve it. I'm sorry. You're just a clown. How can every single review I've read of this show, every recap, think it was the high watermark so far, but this clown decides, oh, it's terrible. He's just hating on The Leftovers, well, and I can't stand that.
He's allowed to have his opinion. I will tell you this. He is not alone. There are some people on Twitter who still have not been moved. But I personally thought this was my favorite episode so far. One thing that I thought was interesting is how it just truly stayed on Matt's character the entire time. You were kind of waiting for them to shift into different characters, but it just stayed with him. And Eccleston is a fantastic actor. I only saw him in that 28 Days Later? I know he was Doctor Who, but I'm pretty sure he was the like general guy.
Oh yeah, you're right. He was. That's right. Okay. Yeah,
really
you're right.
Really scary. Yeah. So that's the only time I've ever seen him. I haven't seen the latest Thor. Mm-hmm. But I think that this was a brilliant episode and just gave so much depth to it. Let's get to the recap.
It's time to reheat The Leftovers.
It starts off with Matt being in the church, and I thought it was so cute. He was the one changing the sign, and I knew something was wrong, because usually you hire people to do that. You do. You hire people to help change the signs. It's not always the reverend or just cleaning the church. And I've got to say, the guilty remnants in their winter wear, super cute. I have those same white snow pants.
I think that might be saying something more about you than them.
Listen, you blend into the snow.
Like, I think they just find random white clothing on the street and they're like, hey, it's white. Let's just wear it.
I was really glad that they found white winter clothes. And how cute was that when he offered them clothes and he's like, sorry, it's not in white.
Well, it's because it's cold out, man.
I know,
they looked like they were freezing. They were literally shivering.
They should have gone into church because there was more than enough room. There were only 10 people.
Well, they went into church all right, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, there were 10 people listening to his sermon.
I know. And that, I think, is indicative, obviously, of the state of the church. I mean, everybody has lost faith in God as
a
result of this.
Don't you think more people would want? Like, why do you think the church has so few people? Is it just Mapleton? Do you think that people across the globe have lost faith in religion?
I do. I think everybody across the globe has lost faith in religion.
Why?
Because you live your life as a good Christian. Let's just use Christianity as an example because we're looking at a church here. You live your life as a good Christian. You show up, you do what you got to do. I don't know what the hell good Christians do. They just show up to church and they're nice to people and they donate their time and whatever. And then you have guys who rape children, or we find out later on, gamble away all their kids' college fund away. These guys are bad guys. They ain't good Christians. Yet they go. And as a Christian, you're supposed to believe that this was probably the rapture.
But I don't think so. And I think that's the difference. That's what Matt is saying. And that's what all religious members are saying. They're saying this wasn't the rapture because all these good people were left
behind.
But
don't you think that's a little confusing for the followers? Like, yeah, maybe Matt Jameson is sitting there saying, yeah, this isn't the rapture. But don't you feel like you would have some back and forth pulling and tugging in your own mind, even though your guy, your reverend's telling you that it's not the rapture, but these people disappeared. And the only reference you know to people disappearing like this is indeed the rapture in the Bible.
No, and there's also aliens. I don't know why people are just ignoring this whole aliens bit. I digress. Do you think there was ever a point in the history of this made-up world where there were a lot of people at church after the rapture? After the sudden departure?
I imagine that there was probably a slight influx of people in church, like right after the departure happened. Maybe they were trying to find leadership or faith or whatever that they were looking for in the church, but they just couldn't find it. And that's why they left. They went to the church for answers, and just like the U.S. government or the governments around the world, they didn't have answers either. And that probably pissed a lot of people off. This is something that is a cataclysmic event. People just disappear for no reason.
I bet there's a direct correlation between the amount of people who stopped attending church or religious services and then the amount of people that have been joining the guilty remnants. Because that's what they then put their faith in.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm not even sure if it's faith that they're putting into the guilty remnant.
Their beliefs, their memories, their lack of faith then.
Yeah, I think that's the antithesis of faith.
Yeah.
I think that it is just apathy that brings them to the guilty remnant.
So Matt's there and he's giving a sermon to these 10 people and he tells a story, we figure out, about his childhood, how he was super jealous that his sister was born. I got to be honest with you. I get that. I was the middle child, and I was really upset when my brother was born.
I was the baby, so I didn't have any of that crap.
Yeah, your sisters probably still hate you to this day because of that. My mom had to buy me a doll. They had to give me lots of one-on-one attention, but you knew you were no longer special.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it with Matt. He thinks he's special. He thinks he's done the right stuff all this time.
Correct.
And he tells a story about how he begged for, you know, attention from his parents, and he ended up getting leukemia. Mm-hmm. When he said that, it reminded me of the stories of genies, and you need to be careful for what you wish for, because you will wish for something. Or what was that story about the guy that wanted everything to be gold? And was it Midas?
King Midas.
And then he, like, didn't he become gold? And everyone he loved became gold or something. You know, you have to be careful for what you wish for. And of course, Matt got better, but you know, it just kind of, that's what it is. He wants to be special. He wants to be right. He wants to.
I don't think he wants to be. I think he thinks he is special. I think he thinks he is the hand of God.
After this episode, after, definitely.
Yeah, I think he wants, or he truly believes that he is doing God's work.
Part of his work, of course, is doing this newspaper where he just bashes people and says all the crimes or wrongdoings that they did. And one man came in. I'm going to call him Karma Man because he comes in and I don't know if it was his daughter or his friend, but he like beats Matt up.
Oh my God, just pounds him to a freaking pulp.
And shoves one of these newspaper articles in his mouth.
I'm surprised he didn't pull a zipper down and did pee on him.
Oh God.
Seriously, I would have done that. Probably.
I literally have in my notes, Karma Man, because that's that's what I would have said as I was kicking him. I'd be like, that's Karma.
He looked like Larry the Cable Guy to me. I'm not going to lie, but I'll go with Karma Man. I think that's a good name.
Thank you. I like it too. And after this, it goes into the opening sequence, which I still love. I love that opening sequence with the frescoes and Max Richter's music.
You know, I noticed actually the first image of the opening is actually of a cop being torn down away from all the people going up into the air. So obviously, I think that's in reference to Kevin.
Well, there were certain people. I mean, that's one thing that I was wondering. Do you think these characters on these frescoes, a lot of them are supposed to be portraying? Because one of them looks like the mayor. Pretty soon in the sequence, she looks like the mayor and she's still on the ground. And then, of course, there's that baby later on flying in the air. Yeah. There's people like having sex or something.
Yeah, like some guy touching a girl's boob.
Yeah, there's a lot of like nudity.
Whoa.
When you remember what Kevin was doing during the sudden departure. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, are some of these frescoes supposed to be correlating to different characters here on the show? So that will be interesting to find out as it goes along. Then we're in the hospital.
I love this
because
scene.
Matt's beaten up.
Oh.
And he meets with Kevin Garvey.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin's there checking in on him.
He's like, hey, you're gonna press charges? Like, it's happened multiple times. It's like he's already gone through these motions
of being beat up by someone who's mad about the newspaper articles.
I love when he says, yeah, I'll see you next time, chief. That was awesome.
This guy really can take a punch. I don't know if I could keep up
all
with
I could
that.
Think of at this time was Ben Linus. Remember in Lost how Ben just got the shit beat out of him almost like every season, like mm-hmm. pounded, and he just kept chugging along. That's what I thought of when I saw Matt Jameson getting his butt kicked.
And then he ends up in the elevator with that creepy clown.
Oh,
the
I know.
The clown who was... this clown was also at the sudden departure party.
Really? I didn't know that.
Someone sent me that on Twitter. They're like, oh, it's the clown again. I was like, who is this clown? I'm freaking out. Am I supposed to be getting some deep, dark secret? The clown was at the party, and the mayor said something like, get that creepy clown out of here. She didn't like the clown being there, but it's the same clown, and that clown sure is creepy.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to go over, too, about that scene with Kevin and the Reverend. The Reverend was saying, I'm going to keep doing this newspaper because people need to hear the truth. And he said that your dad understood that. And Kevin follows it up with, well, look where that got him. So I'm going to get into this later. This is going to be part of my sudden theory of the week. But there is a much larger connection between Kevin and the Reverend than I think everybody really believes just from this one particular line. So that's why
that whole family is close to the Reverend in one way or another.
Oh, I know.
So Matt then goes to look for Emily, the girl that fell off the swing, and they were praying for her. I loved this scene. Mm-hmm. He shows up and he's gonna go see her. That's why he's, you know, gonna stroll by.
Talked
after he's
about
done
her in the sermon.
Yep, and he's gonna go, and they prayed for her this morning. Come to find out, she's all better. She was sent home. He's about to do a hallelujah. You mm-hmm. can see on his face. He's like, yes, our prayers work.
God is with me. I'm doing God's work.
And then you find out that she woke up last night. So she actually woke up before all those prayers were made.
Oh, what a kick to the balls. Again, it's one more instance where this guy is a day late and a dollar short. He just can't seem to get anything right. And his faith in God keeps putting him down the wrong path.
So sad. I'm looking at my hands right now. I really need to go get a manicure. What would you do while I would get a manicure, a pedicure, Blake? What would you do with your time?
I would probably just watch TV.
Yeah. But in this show, some guy like takes his kid.
Oh,
while his wife is getting
I was like, why? This is a random conversation.
I know. I'm actually, like, I was wrote down Manny Petty, and I'm looking, and I'm like, God, I should be getting my nails done. These are just...
God, you almost freaked me out there. I'm like, why would anybody want to listen to you talk about your nails?
Well, some guy saw his wife's Manny Petty as a great opportunity to go and get his kid baptized. If you did that while I was having a Manny Petty, if you just... took our kid and did some like extreme religious experience or got him a tattoo. I mean, something that was a really big deal ears. Without me. I would be pretty mad. I would be really, really mad. However, how sweet was this guy? I mean, he shows up. Oh. He was not properly, nor was the baby properly dressed for a baptism. Mm-mm. He has not been to baptism parties. I can tell you that. They were a little too casual. But he shows up and he asks Matt if he can perform a baptism. He apologizes, says, "Hi, Reverend, I haven't been here for a while." This scene was beautiful.
Oh, the music in it. You know, it reminded me of The Godfather. Do you remember the scene at the end of the first one? He's getting his kid baptized and he's killing off all the old families and everything. Oh, I thought that was gorgeous.
At first, I thought this scene was a dream. It was just so different than anything else we've seen in the show. It was just so light-filled, and the cameras were just sweeping ever so slowly. Mm-hmm. It was just beautiful and warm and loving. And then it cuts to they're talking, and the Reverend's asking him, you know, can you come to church? Because the guy was asking, so how much do I owe you? And the guy said, I just want you and your wife to come to church. And the guy said, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. At that moment, because he was out of his robes, I thought, oh, crap. Was that a dream sequence? Mm-hmm. Did that not happen? And then I thought, okay, it did. They're talking, and that baptism did happen. But it was just this perfect, beautiful moment. And it was, I feel like, the one time in the episode that Reverend Matt was really smiling.
Yeah, he finally found something that actually made his life worth living. Of course, I mean, eventually we find out that his wife is there and everything. But he's actually doing the work that he's supposed to be doing, and he's so happy doing it. And I was a little upset because this beautiful scene was eventually ruined by what followed after.
What do you mean?
The payment.
Well, because that's the real world, man.
Like, I know. It's like they take the one beautiful scene that this show has created and they have to drag it back down with the crap that goes on in this regular world.
But they don't. It's Matt. Like, Reverend Matt
True,
is the one
right.
who is choosing to continue. The way that he gets paid by this gentleman, instead of giving him money, instead of saying, I'm going to come to church, he says, I know what you really want. I've got some serious bad news about some guy named Andrew Sozaki, who used to get drunk and go out to the casino, and he ended up spending all of his kids' college fund. So now Matt's like wicked excited because he has another newspaper article to write, another person who mm-hmm. departed who had a really bad record. So Matt's still pumped, but you're right. I mean, the light went away. It was like Matt was doing God's work. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing as a reverend. He was not judging. He was building someone up. He was helping someone furthering their faith. And you're right, he got there. And then he decided to take that information. He could have told this man, you know what?
Just go.
No, this was a beautiful moment. This was about your daughter's baptism today.
Spread the word.
Yeah. But and instead, he took the news and...
And you saw his face. As soon as the guy said, hey, I know this guy. He was doing X, Y, and Z. You saw the reverend's face turn around and like contort into this sneer. Like, oh, yeah, all right. I know what you're getting at, man. Thank you very much. Let's go get him. I thought that was such a scene that just could have been really beautiful. But I mean, I understand why they did it, because this is the character that Matt Jameson is. You sit there and you're like, wow, this guy isn't all that bad. I actually kind of like him. And I found myself liking Matt Jameson in this very moment, thinking, you know what? This guy's a little misled. Maybe he's just a little messed up in his head for whatever reason, but he's a good guy. And maybe that is the case. But he can't seem to just get himself out of this rut of tearing all these people down.
He ends up driving to the casino to go get more dirt on this poor guy, Andrew Sozaki, who is here anymore. And I love how he just kind of like walks in And the security guard is like, I don't really think so, sir. We don't really do that. And Matt just says, no, oh, didn't you lose someone?
Oh, of course. And of course the guy did.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's,
you
his
know,
niece.
And they talk about this guy who, Albert Wayne, who disappeared from jail. Like, literally was in his jail cell. This monster man was one of the departed people. So Matt then uses that jailed criminal.
I know. How awful is that?
And says, you know, I'm trying to show people that their pain isn't what we think it is. Mm-hmm. And I need to get this dirt on this gambler. I need to get these files from you because I need to show everyone we deserve this for the people that we lost. So somehow he, like, convinces this casino guy
because
get him in.
He pulls at his heartstrings. He says, if this guy, this child abductor, is on the same list as your niece, your beautiful little niece, doesn't that confuse you? You have to separate the innocent from the guilty. Otherwise, what's the point of mourning them? And I think that's how he gets the guy, because he pulls at his heartstrings.
This guy's going to get fired. I'm going to tell you what. He's going to get caught. That is the opposite of what you do as a casino person.
Not smart.
And I love that he asked him, like, hey, what happened to your face? Because he was actually kind of mad. He did hesitate. I'll give the casino guy this thing. He did hesitate at first. He was like, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And Matt was like, come on, man. Give me the info. And the guy basically told him, you're being a jerk. You're being a little too pushy. And I know why you got beat up. I know why you have a black eye. Like, this is, no, I'm not going to give you that information. But Matt has been doing this for 3 years.
And he knows. He knows how to get at these people. He shows them the picture of the guy. And finally, the little security guard there, whatever he was, the pit boss, he gives in.
Before Matt leaves the casino, he sees some pigeons hanging out on the roulette table. That's roulette, right?
Yeah, that's roulette.
Oh, look at me.
Look at you, Miss Gambler.
But let's talk about more crazy talk. These crazy pigeons. Yeah. There were pigeons in the beginning of the episode. There was one pigeon, and it just was hanging out in the church, and Matt had to kind of nicely give it a little shoe bird. And now these pigeons are on the roulette table. So when you first saw it, did you think that Matt was making it up in his head, or did you know those pigeons were real?
I thought that the pigeon was real. And the reason why I think the pigeons were real was because of the first pigeon. The first pigeon was in that building. It was in his church. And he shoos it away and he looks up and there's the GR sitting there stalking him. And you're wondering, is the GR there because they're just trying to piss him off? Are they trying to recruit him? Who knows? But because I saw that first pigeon and then you see this second two pigeons, I thought they were real because of that. Of course, how the hell is a pigeon or a pigeons going to get in a casino, especially Mohegan Sun, where it's like, how the heck is that going
to
happen?
Pigeons get in everywhere. Birds get... You know what I hate when I go to, like, Home Depot and there's a bird stuck in the gardening area?
Oh, my God. I hate that.
Because you just feel bad. You know that bird's not going to live. It's not going to find its way out. And especially in these kind of casinos, I get lost and I'm a human. I can't find my way out of casinos. They make them on purpose to be like a maze. So I kind of feel bad for that pigeon. But it definitely seemed to be... It's funny that they chose a pigeon because... Doves are like the real sign of God. Mm-hmm. You know, you see doves at weddings, and there was a dove when the ark finally landed with Noah. But it's true.
Like, I'm sure it was.
And doves are just like the dirty, pigeons are just like the dirty version of a dove. Cause I think they're like the same family. I think doves and pigeons are pretty much cousins, but that's like the dirty one.
Well, now that you bring up the pigeon thing versus the dove thing, I think it's probably very poignant that they put pigeons in as opposed to doves. Maybe that's saying something about these pigeons, that they weren't necessarily a sign from God. They were a sign from something else, or maybe pigeons are just pigeons, man. Maybe that's the case. But what I'm getting at is this. Matt took these birds as a sign of something that was greater than him. And maybe that is the case, but it was not a force of good. It was not a force of good at all. And I think that is represented by the fact that the first time the pigeons came into the story, right behind them was the GR, who is definitely not a force for good.
Someone who is good is Mr. Banker Man. I love Mr. Banker Man.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know that guy's name. We're just going to call him Mr. Banker Man.
He He doesn't care that people suddenly departed. He is still living life. He is the opposite of the guilty remnant.
Dare I say the happy remnant?
He is a nice, sweet man who has let Matt have this church, even though there haven't been any payments on it.
Yep.
Which, no banker does that.
Nobody.
Once again, he's going to get fired along with the casino guy because these guys are just pushovers with Matt. But he's been letting Matt stay there, but he's got some bad news. Somebody has come and decided to buy the church for $135,000 cash.
And he was trying to let Matt know for weeks, but the Reverend was just blowing the phone calls off.
Yeah, well, okay, let me tell you. Discover Card used to call me back when I was in college because I owed Discover Card some money. I did the same thing. I would ignore. I'd see that phone number and I would ignore. And I loved that scene with Matt, who doesn't know how to use his car. And he's actually trying to hit like the ignore button when the bank is calling. And he accidentally hits it and it comes up. And he's like, hey, Matt, how you doing? And you can tell Matt was like, crap.
Damn it, they got me.
I thought I hit the hang up button.
Well, time out. Matt has a serious looking car for someone that's got no money.
No, because he had it probably from insurance from his car accident.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if your car got broken, it was a nice car, and you got totaled, and your wife got hurt. I mean, the airbag exploded, so he totally got insurance money.
Yeah, you know that thing was totaled.
It's not like he drives, you know, like a Mercedes or
something. No, but he's got like a nice Ford Taurus maybe a Fusion, I think.
So what? It has the Bluetooth thing.
And it's got the digital pad and everything.
Good for him.
I'm proud of you.
But yeah, so he tries to ignore the banker all this time, shows up, but the banker says, listen, the church is bought, but I'm going to give you until tomorrow, 24 hours. You need to have cash plus $1. Yeah. You need like $135,000 and then another extra dollar. And then you can keep the church. Mind you, Matt has not a cent to his name pretty much. I mean, he goes home and you end up seeing he has like $10 in his pocket.
Not even.
Yeah. So the poor guy goes and sees his sister.
I know.
Huge reveal.
Dun, it's, dun, dun.
It's Nora, the girl carrying a gun who lost all of her family.
Unbelievable. Totally did not see this coming.
I mean, we saw them hug in the last episode.
Yeah, but you thought they might have been buddies, or maybe he helped her through a rough time when the family departed, and maybe she was going to church to get answers, and maybe he helped her. Who knows? When the family poofed, by the way, I love this verb, by the way, that's now been created. When they say, instead of everybody saying that people departed, they say that they just poofed. You know, I think that's so funny. I love that.
Who's made this up? Is this on the show?
It's on the show. Yeah, it's poofed.
Oh,
they refer to that on the show. Anyway, you feel like that they were probably
buddies.
I
don't know if I could take that seriously. I used to babysit these girls who could called farts poofs.
Get out of here, really?
Swear to God.
That's disgusting. Who calls a fart a poof?
Well, I think it's a little bit more ladylike. And there were two girls, and that's what they would call them, poofs.
Oh, my God. No, that's not ladylike. That's
just dumb.
This
is going to be really hard for me to watch this show. And everyone keeps talking about how everyone's poofing. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah. So you think that maybe they're buddies prior to, but they're not. They're brother and sister. And apparently their relationship is actually kind of good.
Yeah. Well, their parents died when they were young in a fire.
In a fire of all things.
Oh, gosh. So sad. And what we see in like a flashback at some point is I think they were seeing the fire themselves. They were outside of the house.
Oh, my God.
So that is incredibly traumatizing. And to make matters worse, Matt comes and asks Nora for money. And she's like, yo, bro, I don't have money. And he said, I know you do. I know that you got that, what was it, departure money or the...
Yeah, the benefit fund or whatever.
The benefit fund.
Yep.
Which is interesting because last time we talked about the benefit fund, I didn't believe it really existed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe Nora's just doing private research for herself. Maybe she's just making this stuff up. Like, who is giving this benefit money? Who? The government?
The government's probably giving it. Maybe the insurance companies. Although, this is what I would say about that. There's no way insurance companies are giving the money away. And I'll tell you why. Because people poofing, it's an act of God.
No, it's not. The religious leaders have already come out and said it's not.
Yeah, but according to the insurance company, that is not something that they would cover. It's beyond their capability. They didn't die. They didn't get in a car accident. Their house didn't burn down. They didn't break a leg or whatever. They just disappeared.
So who is paying into this sudden departure fund?
The government. It's like who paid into the funds that helped bail out the country back in 08. Nobody helped pay into it except the taxpayers.
And so Nora actually must have a lot of money because she lost three people.
Yeah, so you probably wonder, they probably get like, I don't know, 100 grand per person maybe?
Maybe.
I that's my guess. Goodness. I don't know.
No matter what, Nora does not want to share that money. Matt, I don't know why he does this. Reverend Matt just decides to be a jerk and like lets Nora know that her husband was having an affair.
I think he did it because she wanted him to stop it. It's not working, Matt.
The newspaper. Yeah, she wants him to stop.
Yeah, it's not working. It's not worth your time anymore, buddy. Stop it. If you stop this, I'll give you the money. I'll do it. No problem. But then he gets pissed off. And now either it's like a really bad selling technique or he really got hurt and he pissed her off. Well, she pissed him off.
You know what sucks? Is that had he agreed to stop printing that paper, which hurts everybody. We've seen very few people who have benefited from this. Mm-hmm. If he had stopped, Nora would have given him the money. He could have gone to the bank that same day.
Yep.
And he would have bought the church.
Yep. Well, we're going to talk about this. If he had just done a lot of things, he could have had the money, could have had the church, but he just couldn't help himself. Couldn't stop. And that's what keeps happening with him. He just can't seem to get out of his own way. And he begs her for the money, saying, things are going to change. People are ready to come back. I just did a baptism. And we all know that's full of crap. Yeah, he did a baptism. That's great. Proud of you, boy. I'm so happy that you did that. But no one's coming back to that church. Nobody cares what God has to say right now. And there's no moral line there. Nobody cares.
Everyone keeps asking about Mary. So Nora asks about Mary. Mr. Bankman asks about Mary. And I didn't know who Mary was. I didn't know if Mary was his daughter or was his wife. We end up finding out it's his wife who is bedridden. And we end up finding out that Matt and his wife Mary got into a terrible accident that we actually saw in the premiere.
And you didn't even know that you saw it.
No, and it was them, and she, that airbag did not do a very good job, by the way. It was like half deflated. So maybe that's why he got so much money for a new car, because that airbag looked pretty bad. Did not do its job.
Well, I was thinking about this. You know how in the dream sequence that when we see all this happen at the end of the episode, he gets in the car, picks her up, and decides to run with her because he needs help. Bro, come on, man. You know, you should know better than that. You don't pick a lady up when she's got a problem like that, or anybody. That's like the first rule when it comes to like spinal injuries.
Yeah.
You don't touch them. Leave them there. Like, what are you doing, man? Come on. You gotta be. And I wonder if that's the reason why she's all messed up now, because he's the one who did it.
I'm excited to see how a judge came into this. Because that's when he got messed up because of some judge, because some judge wronged him. Mm-hmm. And then even later when he picks out the money, it says, you know, something about this is because of the judge.
You deserve this.
Yeah. So I don't know. Did something happen in regards to this accident that he sued somebody and the judge didn't find something in his favor? Did they find him responsible for an accident?
Well, no, that's impossible because the judge poofed. He was gone. At the time of the departure.
Oh, gosh. So who is this judge? What did he do?
I think maybe, and I don't know. I remember somebody writing this on Twitter. If it's true, I don't know. I'm sorry if it is. But the judge was the one who got into the car accident with them. And he poofed behind the wheel.
Okay. That would make sense.
That would make sense. But I don't know. I cannot... corroborate that information. I'm furiously looking it up right now.
Especially if the judge was a bad person. If the judge had bad things, that would just rile his feathers even more. Mm-hmm. So we get to see a bit of Matt's life at home. And he goes and there's his housekeeper who helps take care of Mary when he's away. And she's upset because she hasn't been paid in many days. And she's like, listen, man, I am not going to keep working here. And Matt gives her that like measly $10 or whatever he had left
in his pocket. It looked like $2. Yeah. Seriously.
I agree. The poor thing. And he promises her that he'll be paying her soon. And then we finally see Matt lose it.
Yeah, he's sitting there with his wife and
in his fold-out cot.
Oh, I know. It was so like it felt like something that any like devoted husband would do for his wounded spouse. It was so sad. And like he's giving her a bath and like the attention to detail. It was put there on purpose. Because he did the same thing to his church. Remember, he cleaned the blood off the carpet. He was pledging all the floors. He loves his church. And he did the same thing for his wife. Cleaned his wife up. Took her in the tub. Did the lotion on her skin after the bath. And she doesn't respond to him just the same way the church doesn't respond to him. God doesn't respond to him, but he still does it because he has that faith in that person. And he loves them desperately. I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Another beautiful part was actually the music in this area.
Yeah.
It had the main theme that they play during the opening sequence, but this time it was played on string instruments.
I know.
It was gorgeous.
Max Richter is killing it.
He is.
He really is killing it, man. I'm a huge Michael Giacchino fan, and obviously I know you are too. Like, we're like sick Giacchino fans. Like, we actually went to Dallas to go see this guy perform. It was crazy. We met him. We talked to him. It was wicked cool. But I'm starting to get a huge music crush on Max Richter. He is awesome. He's
very
nailing
impressed.
It.
Very impressed. The other thing about this scene, and it was the first time that I saw that Matt had a ring on his finger.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he was crying and his hand went to his face, I didn't know what kind of church. I should have looked at the sign. I didn't know what kind of church he was a reverend of. And to be honest, I didn't think that he was married. I just thought, because you know how some religions don't allow... Yeah, like, is it only Catholics?
Catholics don't allow it. Protestants do. And this church is an Episcopalian church.
Well, that's Protestant.
Did I say Protestant? What did I say?
You said Protestant.
I did. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like there are some denominations that still don't allow marriage. I don't really know.
All I know is that the Catholics don't do it. And if any of you are Catholic out there, I'm Catholic, so I can say this. They got to get over it. Let the priest get married. Who cares?
Anyway, Jesus, this come on, is the first time that, you know, of course, now we've seen that Mary is his wife, but you get to see the ring, so...
Oh, his wife, by the way, is mm-hmm. Janelle Maloney from The West Wing, who played Donna. And I know you didn't watch The West Wing.
No.
But I did when I was in college, and we used to have West Wing parties and everything. I had such a huge crush on her. Oh, my God, Donna. Ugh.
She is not looking too good right now.
Doesn't have much of a personality in this one.
Oh,
too soon.
So then in the middle of Matt's crying, he's looking at this painting. Is that a famous painting? Like, what is that painting?
I furiously looked this up today. I could not find one reference to this painting in any recap or in any analyzation of this particular episode. I really don't know, and I'm not smart enough to figure it out on my own.
Like, I don't know if the bearded guy is God or if the bearded guy is supposed to be, like a regular human, someone who is an apostle. I had no idea.
Something tells me it must be like one of the biblical figures that suffered through a lot. And that's probably why it's in his room. So who would that be? That would be like what?
Like Prometheus.
Oh, but he's not a biblical figure, honey.
Isn't he?
No, that's a Greek god.
Just kidding.
Oh, God. I may edit that one out. No, I'm going to keep it in there. Keeping it in there. No. The guy, who was the guy that had all the diseases on him and everything? And come on, you went to, you know all this biblical crap.
And Jesus helped him?
No. It was the guy that,
I don't really know.
Whatever. Who cares?
Anyway, we don't know who this painting is.
We don't know who it is. Sorry.
So if any of you are listening and know what this painting is of, because I'm really sitting there saying, are we supposed to know who this painting is?
Like, I felt dumb.
Yeah, I really obviously did. Look at me saying Prometheus. My goodness.
Prometheus.
Anyway, so he somehow gets this great idea. It's like a light bulb goes off in Matt's head and he knows what he's going to do. He calls his housekeeper. He's like, get on over here. I'm going to pay you overtime. I'm going to pay you everything. And he runs over to Kevin Garvey's house where he thought he was going to be alone. He's got a shovel. I didn't know what he was going to go do. I thought he was going to go break into Kevin Garvey's house and go like smash Kevin. I did not know what was going to happen.
He just walked in with his shovel and you're like, oh, bro, bad news is going to happen right now.
And there's Lori. And Lori is doing what you called Lori might be doing.
Thank you.
My sudden theory of the week is coming true right before your very eyes. You can just thank me right now. I don't even need to... you don't even need to, like...
Just tell our listeners what your sudden theory was.
My sudden theory of the week is that Lori is going back to Kevin. She loves him, and she's gonna get away from the GR, and eventually, of course, there's gonna be a problem with the GR. They're gonna find out that she ain't too faithful to him, and they're gonna try to punish her, and she's gonna end up dead.
Oh God!
And Kevin's gonna be pissed.
That is a scary idea, scary sudden theory. I just thought it was so sweet that of everything, she's sitting on a swing, looking at the house. Maybe she was looking at him getting ready for bed, or the shadows in the house, or seeing, you know, her daughter, and she's just sitting on the swing, and the swing is just such this. Just precious,
innocent,
you know, vehicle rather than her standing or sitting in a chair,
ripping a butt.
Yeah.
She was sitting in the swing, swinging this youthful act that she wanted to get back to her old life. I'm telling you, this is going to happen. This is going to be the major sticking point of the show. Something's going to happen to Lori.
Well, I love that Matt then sees her and they're both literally like, oh shit.
Like deer in headlights. And it's funny because the light goes on, the motion detector.
Yeah.
You're both like, you know.
Neither of us are supposed to be here. What are you doing here? I don't know. No questions asked. No questions asked.
I won't say anything if you do.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, hey, get it. You know?
Really, neither of them are supposed to be in this backyard. So Matt then goes up and digs up the most glorious thing. It's a peanut butter jar. And if you love peanut butter as much as me and Mr. Garvey do, then you are like, man, you have got some good taste. Not only is it a peanut butter jar, it's a peanut jar loaded with cash, $20,000.
And you know what? I got to tell you too. It's a Jif peanut butter bar. It's not a peanut butter jar. It's not like that Stop and Shop brand that has like the weird oil and chunks in it and nothing. This is like quality peanut butter jar.
Yeah, I'm a choosy mom. And I like that stuff.
It ain't no Skippy, it's Jif.
So yeah, that's when there was that note that said, the judge took the bribes. Yep. Like you deserve this. So was this from his dad or was this?
This is from the dad. Because remember, Matt says that to Lori. Hey, Kevin's dad left me something here. I'm just going to pick it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they obviously have some serious relationship. Why does he have $20,000 worth of cash just in a peanut butter? Well, he can't use it. He's in the nut house.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be part of my sudden theory of the week, so I'm not going
to
get into it.
Okay. Anyway, so he goes back to the casino.
Yeah.
And he bets on that table where the pigeons were. I don't know why he picked, 23 to put it down. I don't really understand.
No, he put it all on red.
That's all that it means. As long as it ends up on red, no matter what number.
You'll like if you bet a dollar on red, and it shows up red, you're getting a dollar back.
I like this. It's only 50-50 odds. I like this game.
This game sucks. It will tear your money away in a heartbeat. I went to my buddy's bachelor party in Vegas. Uh-huh. I put down $100 on red. Gone. See you later. One roll.
That
gone.
Was, you put down $100 of our money?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did it.
And you, okay, we'll talk about this a little later. Anyway, you should have had some pigeons because obviously...
I needed pigeons at this time.
It's a good thing. So that keeps staying on red, doesn't want to change it. People are starting to crowd around him. They're like, yo, man, you're great. And this is when you start to get a little nervous because there's this one drunk guy and his girlfriend puts, what, like $5 down on 10? On black.
Yeah.
And
blacks do.
And they're noticing how much money he has. And this is when I started to get nervous.
I don't blame you.
Because, I get nervous when I ride my scooter around town and people can see my engagement ring. I flip it around. I'm nervous about that. If people saw that I was banking $100,000+, I would be very nervous. And Matt should have been.
Well, the thing that I liked about this was he was writing that letter about the guy who gambled his kids' money away and was telling everybody that this is a bad dude. Well, here's Matt going to this casino, the very same casino, and gambling this money away.
Yeah, but it's his money.
Well, how do you know it's his money?
Because Mr. Garvey wrote a note saying this is for you, Reverend.
I mean, a priest's supposed to gamble.
They can do whatever they want. They're regular people.
I don't know. I think gambling is probably like a sin somewhere.
It's not. I saw Moses, that Ten Commandments movie.
Oh, yeah?
It's not in the Ten Commandments.
See, I thought there were 15 commandments.
No, there's Ten Commandments, and then Jesus says, love another person just like
you love yourself.
Oh, no,
no. You see, I was watching that movie, The History of the World, the one by Mel Brooks, and Moses comes out with the 15 commandments, and he drops. He goes, I have brought down the 15 commandments from God. And he drops one of the tablets and he goes,
Oi. Ten commandments for all to obey.
It's comedic genius.
Well, casino playing is not in there. I doubt it's like really highly looked upon.
Yeah.
But he's fine for going there. That's his money. I don't feel bad for him for doing it. He just was stupid. I'm going to tell you that. You can tell he doesn't go to the casino. He was stupid for how he's just walking around with $160,000, doesn't have any protection. And then he goes back into his car, just happy as a clam, going through his money. And sure as shit, he gets beat up.
Oh, this guy shows up. He's like, hey, can I get some money? He's like, yeah, how about you keep the $200 and I'll take the envelope. And he gets his ass kicked again.
And then some like beast move comes over him. It reminded me, so there's Matt, like bloody pulp.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was it. I thought, you know what, buddy? That's what
you
get.
You lost out, yep.
You lost your money. This episode has been really good so far. I honestly thought he lost the money. But then something came over him and I looked at him and I was like, that's what happens when women give birth. Like you think you are down and out and you think that you just can't go on anymore. And then all of a sudden this like animal like beast comes out of you and you just muscle through it. And that's what happened to him. He like sprung up and just beat this guy up. Did he kill him?
He was possessed and I think he might have killed him. You see the way he was wailing his face against the cement?
I had to cover my eyes. I was really nervous that it was going to be like Prince Oberyn.
Oh, God. Even when he's taking his thumbs and sticking it into his eye sockets. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
That's what I really thought. So I covered my eyes. So I don't know if that guy's dead or not.
No, I think if he's not dead, he is like close to dead. He might as well be dead. He might be a vegetable after this beating that he got. Oh, I'm looking at my notes as I'm talking about this. There was a lost Easter egg that I noticed.
Do tell.
The second roll that he did on the roulette table was red 23. You want to know what 23 is?
What? A number in Lost.
Jack's number in Lost. Just throwing that out there. I know. I'm sorry. I'm a Lostaholic. I'm sure most of you already out there already are. But he won on 23 red. And I was like, yes, Jack Shepard. All right. Man crush.
Ugh. So he's driving back with all this money. And
after he beats the shit out of some dude.
God.
Oh, my God.
That was so scary.
It was like animalistic. And oh, there you go. People are turning into animals, even priests. And that's why you keep seeing all these allegories to animals. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, God. He goes back to Kevin's house. Why? To replenish this money that was left for him. So unless you think Mr. Garvey is going to come out of the nut house anytime soon, I don't know why you're putting that money.
Rainy day fund? I don't know.
Maybe. And he rolled it perfectly back up. I can't roll like that. So I'm impressed with these guys' rolling skills. The swing was still swinging.
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin's house.
That means she had just left. And that means she was there all freaking night, by the way. All night.
Ugh. She needs like a little blanket.
When does this girl sleep? Because she's got to go out and do her own job.
She doesn't sleep. She just doesn't. Oh, something else I noticed that was so cool.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's Matt's walking up to Kevin Garvey's house. The black truck was still in the driveway.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't see that.
There was the black truck and then there was Kevin's car behind it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So my theory that Kevin is still this mysterious bald man.
It's
still going because that mysterious bald man would have needed his truck by now. And it still is sitting in Kevin's driveway.
Oh, baldy.
So, yeah. So, of course, Matt puts some money back and he is driving and it's daytime by now. And he's about to go see hopefully the banker. He sees GR. Person, a guilty remnant.
Gets slushied again. With a rock.
So he's bleeding. He's obviously hurt. And that is just so sweet to the guilty remnants.
Yeah.
This is a moment where it almost makes up for the fact that he's writing this terrible newspaper.
And it almost makes up for the fact that he just pounded some dude to a pulp.
Yeah, yeah. This guy now has a headache as well. And he gets out to try to help him. And then whoever it was in the Jeep, they turn around. Where are they getting these huge rocks, by the way? Did they like go to a cliff and just say like, let's grab a bunch of rocks and throw them at the guilty remnant, guys?
Sounds good, guys.
Like, what is up with these people? And they have terrible aim because Matt isn't dressed in white.
Well, no. I think they purposely wanted to hit him because he was helping the GR. Ugh. And he gets smacked in the face, dead on in the face. How did they do that, by the way? Was that like a styrofoam rock or something they're throwing at poor Chris Eccleston here?
Probably.
Because he got wailed.
Yeah, it was probably a styrofoam one. I hope so.
I know. Otherwise, he would have had a serious injury, man.
You know who has a serious injury, though? His wife. And I've been really upset this entire episode. I'm just going to lay it out there for you. As soon as he has the money, he doesn't call home to say, "Hey, housekeeper, I'm coming home." Or, "You're going to need to stay the day because I need to go take care of some business.
I'm coming home.
And then he gets, you know, hit by a rock. So obviously he's hurt. And then there's this little dream sequence. I'm just going to skip forward. When he does wake up and does all this stuff, he still doesn't call his wife.
Well, he's not going to call the wife. She can't talk.
Call the housekeeper. Check in on your wife.
You know, I think you're right on this one.
And I'm really upset because then you find out that it's been 3 days later and he still doesn't call his wife. He goes to the church. It's like, you need to call your honey because that housekeeper...
We've already established she ain't calling the honey. She ain't going to talk. That's going to be a one-sided conversation.
The housekeeper already doesn't think he has good money. And if he's already been gone for 4 days...
Where's the housekeeper?
The housekeeper probably left and his wife probably died.
Oh my God. Can you imagine that?
No, that's, I'm telling you. Like, the housekeeper is probably like, "Where the heck is this guy? I'm going to go home and get some mac and cheese."
And she's like, "Oh, hell no, man. We ain't doing that."
Oh God. So that really upset me about Matt is that he never called home. Just like I get upset when I watch 24 and Jack Bauer never has a snack. Because it's
or he doesn't go to the bathroom.
Or he doesn't go to the bathroom. In 24 hours, Jack Bauer does not pee nor eat even a granola bar. So that bothers me. But I really wish Matt would have at least texted the housekeeper and said, like, "Hey, looks like it's going to be another few hours." Then right, I would have felt better.
Let's talk about the dream for just a minute. Just a quick minute here.
After he gets hit by the rock, you mean?
Yeah. You know, I love Damon Lindelof for this reason. He loves dream sequences. It reminded me of the dream that, like, Charlie used to have when he was like when Claire was the angel and he had to baptize Aaron. And they had all these really weird imagery with John Locke. And, like, it was just totally freaky. And that's what it reminded me of in this episode. I loved seeing him as himself as a kid. Letting him, like, the doctor telling him that he had cancer. I loved him holding his sister's hand when the fire was burning down the house. And then I knew something was going to be fishy, obviously, when you see him having sex with his wife prior to the accident and she turns into Lori. And then you see his hands catch on fire and all that other crap. But when he goes into the church, it's all the guilty remnant people. It's that crazy lady. It's the lady with the real weird.
The lady
haircut.
That in the previews they say got killed or was taken.
Yeah, yeah.
The glasses lady with the mom haircut.
Yeah.
We'll just call her mom haircut.
Yeah, mom. Love our names. So stupid. So mom haircut's there with her stupid glasses.
But she doesn't look half bad in her regular outfit.
She looks
she was
okay
very
with
nice.
The blue. She's fine. But all of a sudden you see all these guilty remnant people there, and then you just knew it was bad news. So I thought that dream sequence was very cool. And then, of course, he wakes up.
Wait, let's just rewind because I was really confused about one thing.
What, mom haircut?
No. Why was he at one point having sex with Lori?
I was thinking about this and one of our listeners got into this, but we'll talk about it now. And I think we'll probably talk about it in the listener feedback section. But I think that he sees Lori and he knows Lori. He obviously knows the Garvey family. And he knows that Lori is part of the GR now. And she, to him at least, is that manifestation of the GR. And he's getting screwed by Lori, which means he's getting screwed by the GR. Now, yes, it is, you know, he's you know, getting it on with Lori. But I think that's more or less a symbolic thing. He's getting screwed. And it's the GR who's doing it to him. That's why I think Lori was in the dream.
Okay, so he gets up from the hospital. He goes commando.
Yeah.
Where are your underwear? Maybe he remembered that thing when your mom says, always pack another fresh pair of underwear. You never know if you're going to be in an accident and you could need another pair of underwear. Did he not have underwear to begin with?
I don't pack new underwear in my car.
No, but I'm wondering, like, did he not have underwear on to begin with or did he accidentally leave his underwear on?
No, they probably took it off of him. I'm not going to lie. Because they put the Johnny on him. You don't wear underwear underneath the Johnny.
I know, but why didn't he put his underwear back on?
He was in a rush.
And then he's trying to call, and I thought he was trying to call his wife.
Yeah, but no, he's calling the banker.
The bank.
He's calling, what was the guy's name?
Mr. Bankman.
No, the banker man.
Friendly Mr. Banker man.
Our names are so stupid.
And then he gets there, what, 10 minutes late?
No, he gets there at 5 o'clock. Well, no, he gets there 10 minutes early. But they're shutting down the bank. And he's banging on the door furiously. Hey, let me in. And finally, Mr. Banker man lets him in, the sweet Mr. Banker man that he is, and says, you're late. What are you talking about? He goes, no, I'm here. We had a deal. Here's the money. Take it. I got a dollar. I got 20 grand extra. You can have it. Have fun. And he says, that was 3 days ago that you were supposed to come. And you see this look on his face, like on Eccleston's face, like, what the hell happened?
That rock, man. That rock happened.
I don't think that was a styrofoam rock.
No. He does not have 5 o'clock stubble, by the way.
No, he doesn't.
Reverend Matt, he looks clean shaven 3 days later.
And of course, who do we find out bought the church?
The guilty remnant, who I knew bought the church from the get-go. I mean, I'm gonna go with Sean T on this one. I knew from the moment the banker was like, somebody's paying cash and is buying a big building. Same thing said a couple episodes ago when they were like, oh, they pay cash. They have lots of cash, the guilty remnant. They like to buy big buildings and shove a whole lot of people in there. So as soon as Mr. Banker Man said that somebody was buying it with cash, they didn't know who, I knew it was going to be the guilty remnant.
The look on Reverend Matt's face as he's seeing Mother Hen. Patty, Mother Hen taking down those letters that he so carefully put up. Oh, shit's going to go down. This is going to be war.
Throwing out the Bibles, painting the windows. Oh, gosh.
Just
the stink eye between Patty and Matt.
Oh, major stink eye.
And I liked the last song at the end, the Take Me to Church song.
Oh, yeah.
That was nice.
Again, the soundtrack has been phenomenal. Look, I want to say this before we close out this segment. I am so glad Lindelof is back on television. His movies are good. Star Trek Into Darkness, Prometheus, Cowboys vs. Aliens was eh. And he's a great writer. But you know what he needs? He needs time. He needs space. He doesn't belong in movies. He really doesn't.
He's like a red wine. He needs to breathe a little
bit. He's got
to
breathe. He's got to have room. He's got to collaborate with people. He's got to set up. He's got to be able to set up his stories. This episode reminded me so much of Lost. And I know it's such an easy comparison to make because Lindelof is the writer. And it's a natural successor to Lost, I imagine. But the way they got out of their original storytelling for the first two episodes, it was like, it was almost too big. There were too many characters. There were too many things you had to learn. Too many people you had to get to know.
The ping pong guys.
Yeah. Prius guys. And then you had Jill, and then you had Nora, and then you had Kevin, and then you had Baldy, and then you had Lori, and then you had Wayne. You had Wayne. Oh my God. First of all, I'm so glad that there was no Wayne storyline in this episode. I feel like Wayne right now is a total waste of time. And I know that Tom is with Wayne, so you kind of have to care about what happens to Tom. But Wayne is such a waste of time to me right now. I don't care what happens with him.
Well, luckily he wasn't in this episode.
Thank God. And that's why this episode, I think, worked so well. Because they went almost Lost on you. They focused on one character. And some characters came in every once in a while, but you actually had a chance to get to know that character. And it was phenomenal. And that's why I say I'm so glad Lindelof is back, because he excels at this kind of storytelling. You know that picture of LeBron James, you know, of the Nike picture? It's a black and white one.
No.
And his arms are out. And he's staring up into the space.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, we are all witnesses.
Yes.
That's what we should be having. Somebody, one of our awesome listeners should take that picture of LeBron James and put Damon Lindelof's head on that picture and say, yes, we are all witnesses to the greatness of Damon Lindelof coming back to television. It should happen, because this is the perfect example. This episode is the perfect example of why Lindelof belongs on TV, especially TV like HBO or Showtime or even AMC. He has the freedom to do what he wants. He's not being prohibited by a company like ABC or NBC, one of the network stupid TV.
They're not stupid. They're just different.
Well, they're so PC. NBC actually turned down The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is literally the most popular television show in the world. And they're like, nah, bro, that show sucks. Sorry, ain't gonna work.
They're lost, man. They're lost.
So a long story short, I'm glad that Lindelof is back and we are all witnesses.
All right, Blake, do we want to get into our listener feedback?
Yes, let's do it.
So our first bit of listener feedback actually comes from the composer of The Leftovers, woo-hoo, Max Richter.
Atta boy.
And if you want to find him on Twitter, his handle is Max Richter Music. We had told him that we absolutely loved what he was doing. He was killing it on the show. And we wanted to know if his music was actually available to the public. This music that he's now composed for The Leftovers. Max said that he is still writing, but hopefully this music will be available soon. So we are really excited so pumped that we were able to actually talk with Max.
Casey at Harley Dutch wanted to let us know that she was absolutely in love with this show so far. And no one, I mean no one, writes character-centric stories like Damon Lindelof, period, the end. And girlfriend, you are 100% right. And this is the beauty of Damon Lindelof again. He just killed it in this episode. Killed it.
Amen. Right on, Casey.
We got to actually, we're having a budding friendship with the Guilty Remnant podcast.
Oh, you know what it is? It's because we're both like, they're Guilty Remnants and we're the Living Reminders.
We're like team GR.
Yes, yeah.
These guys are actually really cool. They got a really great podcast. If you like podcasts and you want to listen to something after us, I totally recommend these guys. They are really cool. They're down to earth. They're very smart. Very good in-depth analysis. We were tweeting back and forth, and one of my favorite tweets that they had with me was, did anyone else expect the roulette numbers to be 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42? And did this episode of The Leftovers make anyone else remember what was so good about Lost? And guys, you are 100% right. First of all, there was a number. It was Red 23. We already talked about it. And yes, this episode did remind me of Lost. It was awesome.
We had another tweet from Rosalind Hurst. She said the actor playing the Revenant was multifaceted in his performance. The day they left was further illuminated. Ooh, I like that word, Rosalind.
Yeah, he nailed it out of the park on this one. And I really think Eccleston single-handedly put the show back on track. Not to say that I didn't like the show before, but he really solidified it for me. Fell in love with this show right upon this episode. Hamlet is dead, at Hamlet is dead, said he really liked the look on Matt's face at the end of the episode. Is he going to the dark side? Well, Matt, I'm going to get into that on my sudden theory of the week. I know I've said this a number of times now. So as you can tell, we're going to get into that in a little bit. Just so keep listening.
Kyle Tully tweets, I feel like I'm watching Inception while being Inception when it comes to The Leftovers. Only thing it's missing is Christopher Walken.
Well, I replied to him, the only thing that you need a little bit more of is Ken Watanabe, because he was in that movie too. And you know what? I totally agree. Inception was freaky. This show is freaky. Love it. A. Epstein actually thinks that this episode is the walkabout for this show.
Walkabout.
Yeah, Walkabout. You remember the episode where Locke, you discover that he...
For non-losties. Basically, the Walkabout episode in Lost blew your minds. Yes. And took this older character and made him into so much more of a dynamic character.
It literally blew your mind.
Yeah.
When you see the reveal of this character. And that was the show that solidified Lost's foothold in television. Although for me, I liked White Rabbit better with Jack and his dad. I thought White Rabbit was a better episode, but whatever. It is what it is. Go ahead.
L. Stevens tweets, holy shit, best episode of any TV show I've seen in the last year or two.
That's close.
L. Stevens, I'll tell you this. I loved this episode. It was my favorite so far of The Leftovers. So good call.
Definitely. David Wexler says, it's definitely fair to say that we care about Jameson the most. He seems to have struggled more than any character since the departure happened. Of course, it doesn't hurt that he's a great actor as well.
Well,
I agree. Jameson has hurt the most, I think. Well, maybe except for Nora. But you finally... I actually really care about Matt. Even though he's kind of a dink, I care about what happens to this guy now because I've seen what happened to his wife. I've seen what he's going through with his faith. He's actually a really well-developed character.
He just needs to stop writing that newspaper, in my opinion. D. Weasler BB tweets, after he beat up the guy and got back in his car, I yelled, run him over. His intensity and emotion he portrayed. I was literally on the edge of my seat the whole time he had the money. I'm right there with you, D. Riesler, BB. I didn't want him to run him over, but I too was like, get the heck out of there. Hurry up. I was yelling at the television.
Literally on the edge of her seat, screaming at the television. Get out of there. Oh my God, get out of there. Please roll up the window.
Yeah, you do not roll down your window for strangers.
What are we doing here? Come on, Matt, you're better than that. Caitlin, at Fairly Certain, that this was the girl that we actually had a pretty heated conversation with last week about Lori and how she thought that Lori was full of crap and that she was wasting her life because she didn't lose anything. She is convinced that not only did Lori leave her life away from Kevin, she was actually sleeping with Matt Jameson. And that's why Matt's all screwed up about his wife, because he feels guilty for sleeping with Lori.
Ooh, that's an interesting sudden theory, Caitlin.
Girlfriend, I don't know. I'm not sure about this. I think you're taking the dream sequence a little too literally.
I don't know. With this show, you just don't know. So I'm interested to see if that does play out.
What do you say, girl? You want to get into the sudden theory of the week?
Let's do it. All right, Blake, what is your sudden theory of the week?
Matt is in a bad news place. So what happens? The GR buys his church, but he's got 160 grand sitting right there. Literally blood money. Literally blood on an envelope that he's carrying. It's blood money. He doesn't care about that cash. What he's going to do, he is declaring war on the GR, and he's going to order hits on the GR. And that's why I think you see all them dead bodies. And that's why I think somehow, some way, it's going to get out that Lori is there with Kevin, and it's going to be a problem. Lori's going to end up dying in this holy war, and it's going to set up a conflict between Matt and Kevin, and there's going to be a problem. And it's good for the story, too, because it sets up that holy war between the GR and the Reverend. But the one casualty is going to be Lori. So Matt's going to order hits. Things are going to happen. People are going to croak. And Lori's going to be one of the casualties because of it.
Wow. Your sudden theory of the week is very deep.
I know.
It's like, here is the plot line for season one. Possibly season one and two. Mine is not that deep.
Okay, go ahead.
My sudden theory of the week is that the GR, the Guilty Remnants, bought the church not because they want the building, but because they're trying to convert Matt.
Oh, good one.
A lot of people think that the Guilty Remnants were outside of the church in this episode because they were just kind of scoping it out. They were like, oh yeah, that looks nice. What would you paint the windows white? I don't know. I don't know if I would paint
them
white.
I think I'd use a cream color.
Maybe a gray. No, so some people think that they were going to look at the church because they were inspecting it or whatever. I think that this whole ploy is to try to convert Matt into being a Guilty Remnant, and that Patty is doing this because he is such an important figure in the town.
Mother
he
Hen.
Is the Reverend. Mother Hen wants him to switch so badly because he said, no guys, it's been 3 years, I haven't given up. So they have been trying to change him for 3 years, and I think she knows that this is the biggest and worst thing she could do to him, is to take the church away from him. He doesn't have the congregation, he only has 10 people, but he still has that church, and he puts his blood, sweat, and tears into it. Now we know he's in there, and he has been beaten up and had his blood. He's been sweeping it. He does it his own. And she has now taken the only thing that he cares about.
Yep.
And is trying to show him something. And that's why I think they bought it. Not because of the building, but because they want him to break and join the GR.
Oh, great one. I love that.
Please hang up and try again.
Anyway, that wraps it up. We would love to hear your sudden theories of the week. We would just love to hear from you guys in general. We always love chatting with you on Twitter. There are many ways you can get in touch with us. The first and easiest way to get in touch with us is just to head on over to our website. It's thelivingreminders.com.
You can also reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/livingreminders.
Tweet at us. Our handle is @livingreminders.
Email us at thelivingreminders@gmail.com.
And if you listen to our podcast through iTunes, we would absolutely love it if you could go rate and review us there so that more Living Reminders fans and soon-to-be Living Reminders fans can find us and learn all about the Leftovers goodness.
We actually just got a review in from Bob from Princeton. He calls this an energetic, fun, and insightful Leftovers podcast. This is a really great podcast. Mary and Blake are a compelling podcast team. They offer intelligent and insightful perspectives on each episode. With only two episodes of The Leftovers released so far, the sudden theory of the week, yes, segment has already become something that I look forward to each week. So download it and listen today.
Thank you.
That a boy, Bob, from Princeton.
Yeah, so sweet. And guys, reviews like this help make us available to other podcast listeners. So if you want to rate and review us, great. Or if you just want to share this with your friends who also watch the show, we would love to spread the Living Reminders love and would just love to hear from you so that you can join in this conversation.
We would also like to spread, you know, our fellow brethren in this podcast community here. You know, the GR podcast, those are good guys. The Jay and Jack podcast, those are good guys too. I've conversed with them a little bit through Twitter and Facebook. They're really good guys. And if you listen to the Lost podcast, you know Jay and Jack. They're awesome. So go out there, review them too, spread the love. It just helps this whole podcast community out. We'd love for you to go take a listen to them too.
Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of The Living Reminders. Stay tuned for next week when we release our episode 5, when we watch episode 4 of The Leftovers. See you later, everyone.
Bye.